I'm Keith Wooden, and welcome to Story Mosaics. Hey, I just want to thank you all that have been tuning in and getting on the podcast, whether it's through our website, which is storymosaics.com, or whether it's through Facebook. Y'all have been kind of planning out there, and here's the deal. You got to do me a favor, okay? I'm going to ask the big ask. Listen to the podcast, listen to it all the way through, and then rate it. Because when you rate it, it helps it goes up. And I won't tell you all the algorithms that it goes through, but it really helps me a great deal to have that on the search engines and everything like that. So thanks for all you're doing. We had fun last week telling one of those stories of my life. And that's what we're going to do the first Tuesday of every month, is we're going to just have a little bit of a story that comes out of my life. I think it was Brent Henderson who said that Keith is pretty self-deprecating, and I am. I don't have an image to uphold. I really don't care what you think. So I just tell the stories as they come, and they're always kind of fun. The second week, though, and this is where we're at, the second Tuesday, this is where we're at today, is we take a story from what I call story mining. I go out and I listen, and I sit in church on Sundays. There was a guy behind me this past Sunday, and it was so funny because Pastor Darren was walking down the aisle, and this kid said, "Hey, I need to catch up with you on a story that I have for you." And as soon as he said that, my ears perked up. I turned around. I said, "Okay, I want to hear the story first." And so we had some fun listening to his story. But I'm always story mining and looking for the stories. And that's how this story came about. I have a mutual friend with Andrew, and Andrew is about to share a story that just knocked my socks off. I just could not believe how God had worked in some very astounding ways. And so we're looking forward to this time with Andrew. And it's Andrew Peters, and he joins us from Anderson, Indiana today. Native of what area, though? Where are you from?
Yeah, Fishers.
Okay.
Fishers,
yep. Mm-hmm. Is that your original turf?
Pretty much. Okay. Yeah, I went to high school there, spent all of high school there, grew up in Carmel. Okay. Spent a little time in Evansville, actually. Okay. Born in California, of all places. But, you know, like most parents, you find out that it's easier to raise kids around family. So my parents had us out there and moved back.
Well, and you know, the old adage is that California is just a little bit lower than the rest of the United States, and everything loose rolls over there. Yeah. So we, you know, good to have you back.
Yeah.
And you've been here a few years, and that's awesome. Andrew, I have to tell you, I shared this story with my wife after you told it to me, and she goes, "Is his alias Forrest Gump?" Because it seems like you knew all kinds of people. God has brought a lot of people into your life, and not just by happenstance, by purpose, for his purposes, not necessarily your purposes. But your story epitomizes what Story Mosaics is all about. We talk about this. Every person has a story, and you certainly have a story. And I might add to that this time that every story matters to God because he's placed it in our lives for a very specific purpose. And then what we want to do on Story Mosaics is help people tell their stories and help them tell them well. So, hey, we're going to dive right in because we've got a lot to say and a lot to do today. And so thanks again just for coming out. We're just going to go back. And I want to go to a childhood picture a little bit, okay? Mm-hmm. Because I want to take a snapshot real quick of your growing up years, because you are an athlete, okay? You always smirk when I say that, but you are such a tremendous athlete, whether it's cycling or baseball or whatever. Tell me all the sports you played in high school.
I played baseball.
Okay, in high school.
Yes, in high school. I coach the high school team that I went to, Hamilton Southeastern, with the JV guys. Those fellas would tell you I'm not an athlete. you know, getting out there and trying to throw a baseball after quite a few years, that's a challenge.
You're also a cyclist,
yes,
though.
Yeah, that's my passion.
Is it really?
It is, yeah.
Now, okay, so when you're on your bike, mm-hmm. Which I've had the pleasure of seeing you whiz by me, they're going the other direction while I'm headed out on 1000 South there, how fast do you ride?
It depends, right? Weather's a big factor there. Average 19, 20.
Okay.
That's a good average on a ride.
That's right? Amazing.
Yeah. And there's moments where you may be at 15. There's moments where you may be at 25, yeah. Right? It just depends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weather is a big key.
But you also do it long distances.
Correct. Yeah.
It's not unusual for you just to go out and ride 100 miles.
Yeah.
Are you crazy?
Yeah. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's people in my life that definitely think I'm crazy. I definitely stress them out at times with my endeavors. But yes, I love it. It's just something I do to get away from, you know, everyday life. I can get out there and people cannot get a hold of me.
That's the way
there's
I feel.
There's not many places like
that's
that.
Feel how I feel about beekeeping. Nobody wants to go out in the beehives with me, okay? So that's where I go to get alone. So
absolutely.
Maybe I ought to start riding a bike instead. But
let's go.
No, let's not, okay?
All right.
But and on the bike, I just picked up the last couple of Sundays ago when we were talking. You guys were going out on a 20-mile ride with the kids and everything. That just amazed me. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, and my boys have really gotten into it. My oldest, you know, the big ride that I do every year that means the most to me is called the Tour de Komen for breast cancer. We ride from Fishers to Terre Haute to raise money for breast cancer.
Wow.
One of my best friends in the world lost his mom, unfortunately, when he was young. And so we try to do that. And my youngest wants to do it next year.
Oh, that's awesome.
He'll be 13. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
You've done the rain ride and all
rain
of those
ride,
kind
yeah,
of things.
Yeah.
That's super. Well, well, that's a passion of your life. And I say that because that really becomes part of the backstory to what your story evolves in. Because your resting heart rate is what?
It can be 50. Yeah. Yeah. It can be as low as 50. It actually can get into the 40s at times. But yeah.
Just because of the fitness that you have there. And
yeah, it's the cardio.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The cardio that you're working with. Yeah. And what's interesting about that, because that became an alarm in your life.
Correct.
Let me go back, because I think it's important for people to know that you like people to play things really straight with you. You don't like them just to hem-haw around. No. In fact, when you were in high school, I think you asked your coach whether you could be a pitcher, and he said no.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
not going to
exactly.
be
exactly. Yeah, it was January of my senior year. I had pitched, you know, all the way through on JV. Didn't pitch any varsity innings, but I was 9-1 my junior year, and I'm like, you know, coach, you need me at pitcher's workouts next week. No, I don't.
We don't.
I don't, actually.
And we're not going to be using you there.
Yeah, you know, all right, cool. Thanks for telling me. I appreciate that.
And I appreciate this about you, because you've said to me, I'm not going to be a victim.
Yes.
And that's the only way we can do it, is we need to hear it straight from one another. We need to hear those remarks straight. Mm-hmm. Another part of your life that I thought was interesting is that you worked for the Colts for a period of time.
I did.
How did you get that job?
Yeah, so that started in 2001, and I was there through Andrew Luck's rookie year. So that was 2012.
Wow.
That was actually the year that Coach Pagano had his cancer battle as well. I just got lucky. A guy that I knew in college did it, and they had some guys back out of going to training camp and working with the equipment guys. And on a whim, he called me. You know, we were throwing footballs in the courtyard in between classes. You're like, okay, that guy can throw. Evidently, he can catch. And he's probably crazy enough to go work these crazy hours. And it was supposed to just be that.
Yeah.
And it just turned into something where I worked really hard, did all the jobs that nobody else wanted to do, and they asked me to stick around.
It connected you with a lot of people.
It did.
Not just the famous people, but people who actually began to pour into your life.
Correct. Yeah, and many years later. I mean, they poured into me during that time. They transformed the way I thought about preparation, leadership.
Wow.
My faith. A lot of those things. Even business. You know, one of our future head coaches has a lot of adventures in the business world. And we would have long conversations in the mornings before games about, you know, what it'd be like to own businesses and what I was doing. And, you know, but all those things came to fruition many years later.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, really fortunate for that time.
I'm going to fast forward you, though, to one of those occasions, because we're going to go to Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
What year?
2022. Yeah, April 17th.
So we're jumping pretty far ahead.
Yeah.
Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
You come out of church, you go to a restaurant. What restaurant were you at?
Yeah, we were at Stone Creek.
Okay.
You know, actually, we didn't even go to church, you know, that day. And, you know, that's part of the story, I guess. I was at a point in my life where I was drifting a bit, and I'm sure we'll come back to that at some point. But, yeah, I was at lunch with my kids and my aunt and uncle, and I looked at my watch while I was eating dinner, and I'm like, that's not normal. My heart rate, as we talked about earlier, usually in the 50s, 60s, it was 120, which for most people is like, okay, that's normal.
No.
But for me, it wasn't.
But
and I knew something
there
was wrong.
At a restaurant, and you know something
is wrong
immediately.
Yeah. I thought I was having a heart attack.
Seriously, you thought you were having a, it was pounding out of your chest.
Yeah, it was. It was.
So what happens?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of events that start to firecrackers just go off one after another.
Yeah, I just, you know, in my mind knew something was wrong. The room kind of spun, you know, I think out of fear, because I thought at that time I was about to have a heart attack in front of my kids.
Yeah.
And those boys mean everything to me.
Wow.
And so it was scary, really scary. But I said, I need help and I need it now. And I took a ride across the street in an ambulance to Saxony.
Yeah, because you have to recognize you were just minutes, not even minutes, just a mile and a half from a tier one hospital for trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And you get taken over there, and they're starting to do the run-ups on you, trying to figure out what's happening. Mm-hmm. They rule out heart attack.
Yes.
But what do they start
to
find out?
Yeah, it's you've got a really low potassium level, somewhere like 2.5, 2.3, 2.0 is pretty bad. And muscles start seizing up. There's no elasticity in your muscles anymore. And obviously your heart is part of that, a big part of that. And so that's where the journey started. At the time, I was saying, hey, pump me full of potassium because tomorrow I'm leaving for Branson, Missouri to go play Tiger Woods golf course. And I'm not missing that, right? No way.
Focus.
I mean, I got to go play that course. It turned in a hurry.
You know what? I went out, I checked that potassium stuff because I didn't know what's normal and everything.
Yeah.
And the first thing that blinks on is this, simply this, 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
Anything below 2.5 is you're facing death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
so
it could have been.
So you were already at the very corner of death at that point.
Yeah.
And that was what was causing your heart to go like this. It simply was its elasticity was being taken away from it.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So as part of that, the doctor was like, hey, you know, you told me that the room kind of spun on you. And you're going to be here for a while, right? Like, grab a Snickers. You're going to be here for a while, right? And so he's like, you know, you talked about that. Let's just check your head, right? Let's just make sure. Let's rule it out. And
which seemed so strange to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's check your head. I mean, sometimes I don't think you want to know, doc.
Yeah.
You don't want to know what's inside my head. But in this case, it was really important.
It was.
What happened?
So they came back in the room, and, you know, I was expecting what anyone else would expect. Just, yep, we checked it. You're good. Let's get this taken care of, and you'll be out of here. They quickly told me, you've either had a stroke and didn't know it, or you have a mass in your head.
Okay, just take me there. What happens to you mentally in a moment like this?
You know, I don't even know. At that moment, you're actually praying that you had a stroke, right?
Mm.
Because the outcome, obviously, I was okay, right?
Yeah.
But in the moment, it goes from, all right, get me out of here. I'm going to go play golf, to you've got this going on and we need to get you to Methodist downtown. Because it's very possible you might have a craniotomy tonight. That was a possibility.
Help me understand technological words here. Okay?
Yes.
Craniotomy would mean?
Completely open your skull up to operate on your brain.
Find out what's going on.
Well, to remove it if it's, you know, because it was obviously causing some issues.
Just that quickly.
Yeah, just that quickly. My kids saw this all happen. They saw me get taken away in an ambulance. They're at home with my aunt and uncle. Mm. And, you know, how do you even...
Yeah,
you don't even have time to talk to them or prepare them for that. So that was a very scary moment for me. It's just let's go. Like
again,
you got to go
because you want the facts. You don't sugarcoat it. Tell me what I'm up against.
Yes,
let's get down there to Methodist Hospital.
Yeah, put your head down and go.
Mm-hmm. And so you head down to Methodist.
Yeah, yeah, and it's interesting. The first song when I got in the car was a song by the Dave Matthews Band, which happens to be my favorite band of all time. And they have an XM channel, and it just happened to be on. But I got in the car, and Bartender came on. And you think, Bartender, okay, no big deal. It's a song that opens with the lyrics, "If I go before I'm old." And so you're driving towards what could be the end of your life or a life that's much different than what it was even 10, 15 minutes ago. And that song comes on.
Wow.
And it just puts things into perspective really fast.
And we all know that brain surgery is so delicate anyway.
Sure.
But as I studied this and as I immersed myself in it, every place I was reading was talking about millimeters.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was measured in millimeters
yeah.
of what it would take to paralyze you for life.
Correct.
A millimeter away.
Yeah.
What it would take for you to lose your life a millimeter away.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, you don't know all of this, but these mm-hmm. are the facts that are whirling around you.
Yeah.
And so you get down to Methodist. I want to emphasize this because we have listeners all over the United States mm-hmm. and around the world. So to give you a perspective of those who are listening in, when there is a wreck at the Indianapolis 500, mm-hmm. they take those people to Methodist Hospital.
It's the best of the best for Indiana.
It is the best of the best.
Yeah.
It's also associated, though, with IU Medical Center, you know, complex. And again, best of the best, you know. And so here you wind up. There were multiple hospitals around that you could have gone to on the first step,
yeah.
okay?
Yep.
But you went to the Saxony. Secondly, you're now down at Methodist, at one of the greatest hospitals, but they're also connected with another group. These things are not happenstance. Mm-hmm. This is God's signature and his fingerprint all over your life. And I want to bring it back to this because you said I was drifting. You know, mm-hmm. he was not like the number one in my life.
Yeah.
And yet God has his finger on your life.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who need to know that. Mm-hmm. They think if I get good enough mm-hmm. or if I measure up, then God will pay attention. That's not what it's about.
No, it's not.
God wants to be a part of your story right there, right then. Mm-hmm. But they're associated with another clinic that is a world-renowned clinic in cancer, and that's the Mayo Clinic. Mm-hmm. They have this association there as well. And so all of these pieces fitting together. So you're down there at Methodist. Take me those next steps. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like having an MRI at 3 in the morning when you know something's really wrong.
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure it out. You know, there's no sleep. There's no nothing, right?
That's right.
It was a really tough couple hours. And maybe a little bit of sleep, not much. And the doctors come in the next morning and were preparing me, you know, for the worst. Like, this is really bad. But we can do surgery. We don't need to do it today or tonight, you know, whatever. But we need to schedule this out and we need to get moving. So my first inclination was like, this thing's in my head. Whoever can do this the fastest. It's not supposed to be there. So get it out. Yeah.
So we've narrowed it down and their first inclination, is to call it what kind of mass?
Yeah. So they were talking to, you know, my parents quite a bit. It was busy in there. I do not recommend going to the emergency room there unless you really have to. It's just a busy place. And it does give you a little bit of perspective. As bad as my situation was, you're looking around and seeing some people that are in a really yes. bad place in their life.
Yes.
People who need God in their life.
Mm.
You know?
Wow.
And even as much as I need him in my life, I was at that time kind of thinking like, man, this is really sad that our community, people that need help, you know, are here tonight.
Because and, where it's, as it is that tier one hospital, yeah. it is right in the middle of yeah. Indianapolis at a very critical juncture of where a lot of people
yeah,
have
and
great
I,
needs.
So I would say like that portion of that night was like God telling me, look, it could be this bad for you, but it's not. You know, as bad as some things in your life may be or have been, you're not in that situation, wow. right? And so when I do heal you, make the most of it.
Wow.
You know? So they were preparing me for a glioblastoma, or at least preparing my family for that. We later found out that it wasn't, but the Mayo Clinic was the same way. You know, it's, look, this is the same thing that someone like John McCain had, right? And we can't buy you your life, but we can buy you time. Right. We can buy you time to maybe watch your kids grow for a couple more years. Those kind of things are what they prepare you for.
So this is all becomes very sobering as you tell it.
Yeah.
Because they cannot buy you your life. Mm-hmm. We can just buy you a little time.
A little time. Yeah.
And that becomes something that is just a full stop. Mm-hmm. Put a punctuation mark in here because my life is changing radically.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. We've talked about a bunch of God moments already. Mm-hmm. How did Mayo Rochester even become a part of this?
Yeah, it was a family recommendation. Like, hey, look, you've got one shot at this. And I'm so grateful that I was pointed in that direction because I got one chance to do this, you know, and to do it right and to have the best of the best doing it. I didn't make that decision. Like I said, it's in my head and I want it out. Can you do it tomorrow? You know, like put it up for bid? I don't know. It's got to get out of here. But some folks that had my best interest at the time in mind were like, no, we need to go there. And so by chance and by hard work from some other people in my life at the time were like, let's
push this one.
Yeah. Let's see what we it's can like do. Friday, we get the go ahead. We can meet with you on Monday.
Wait. We got to put this in perspective.
Yeah.
Sunday, we're into Monday. Friday, you're going up to Mayo.
We get the news we can be there, but we got to be there Monday morning. So then it's got to get two kids taken care of, get flights, get up there on Sunday for a meeting on Monday morning. Yeah.
And Mayo works in a cohort fashion.
Correct.
Is a whole group of docs.
Yes.
Look at you, who you are, what you have. Mm-hmm. And they kind of, the best of the best have kind of a bidding war on this. They really do.
Yeah. I mean,
they say, I want this one.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah. They're all salary. There's no competition. It's, what can we do to make the biggest impact in this person's life? Give them the best chance to survive. It is the most amazing place in the world, and very fortunate to have been there.
So you meet with a doc.
Yeah.
And his name will be forever etched in your mind. Who is this man?
Yeah. So we met with one doctor first. He's like, this isn't my specialty, but I know a guy that could do this. I'm like,
I know a guy.
Yeah, like, is he off the street? Is he, you know, where is he? He happened to be at...
He fixes cars on the side. Yeah, I know a guy.
Yeah, exactly. Goodness. He's really good in tight spaces. So he was in the middle of a brain surgery, this doctor they were pointing me towards, at St. Mary's Hospital. So in Rochester, you have the clinic, and then down the road about a mile, you have St. Mary's where surgeries take place and normal hospital. They're like, he can meet with you at this time, and then he's got to go back in and do another surgery.
Yes.
Like, this guy's already spectacular, right? Two of these in one day? Are
Two
you
of
kidding,
these in
you
one
kidding
day.
Me?
That's right.
But his name was Dr. Terrence Burns from the great country of Australia. He happens to be the associate professor of neurosurgery, and I affectionately call him the... the Australian assassin, which then I had to then change to the Australian brain assassin.
Or tumor assassin.
I got to do things like that because, you know. I
gravitated towards the Australian tumor assassin to myself to describe him.
Yeah.
But he said, I want to help.
Yes, he did. He said, I can do this. And here are the dates I can do it. But again, he was the guy who was telling me, you know, definitively, like, I think this is what this is, and here are the folks that have had it. You've probably heard of this because of these people. You know, John McCain is just one that sticks out to me as a guy that, you know, it happened and it happened quick. And that was a really tough moment, you know, to know that I had to go home and explain this to my boys, who had already been in the loop, right? Because we're talking a little bit of time had passed, but that's where... You know, that's where my journey with God really, like, I gotta do some soul searching here, and I gotta lean on Him because I can't do this alone.
You described it as you had been adrift, and then you described it one time for me as the fact was that you were just kind of coasting in your spiritual life.
Yeah.
It wasn't that you were in rebellion. It wasn't that you didn't like Him.
Mm-mm.
You're just kind of coasting, and it really wasn't a priority in your life.
Yeah, I just hadn't found the right place. I had drifted from a church that I was involved in who had kind of – they had changed some things, and it didn't really fit with where I was at in my journey. COVID happens. Life happens. There were some things in my personal life that weren't going well, and it happened that I just started drifting. And it wasn't because I wanted it to. I prayed regularly. I knew who was in charge of my life, but I wasn't intentional about my relationship with God in that time in my life.
Yeah. Andrew, this whole concept of drift is so powerful because I think there are many people right now listening who will say, that's exactly where I'm at. Mm-hmm. Not anti-God. I'm just drifting. And there's not an intentionality. And suddenly you had an intentionality to pursue God because everything is on the table.
Yeah.
Four words. I want to help, I want to help you.
Yeah.
You know, those four words changed your life. He said, I'll fit you in. How long away?
So I was diagnosed, like I said, on the 17th. I had surgery on May 20th of that year.
Mm-hmm. So there's 1 month.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is a guy that's been given just a short time to live do in 1 month? What do you do in that month? Do you go home and cry? What do you, I'm serious. Seriously, what do you do?
There was some crying involved for sure. I wasn't crying for myself. You talked about a little bit on the top of this that, you know, I've lived a really blessed life. I've done more at this time. I was 9 days past my 40th birthday. I've done things that people don't do, you know, in a lifetime or two, right? You know, I live by that. It, you know, it's not how long you're here. It's what you do while you're here. Yes. And I've been fortunate to do a lot of really cool things and make impacts and just live a dream life in some ways. So it wasn't for me. It was for my kids. I mean, they're everything. And wondering if you're going to be able to watch your kids grow up, you know, when you're facing that mortality at 40, going, I have all these dreams of raising these kids in a certain way so that they become the young men that I want them to be, you know, and I may not get to see that on this earth. That's tough to, you know, grapple with.
But Andrew, one of the things that I love when I have conversations with you, I mean, is the way you say my sons.
Yeah.
And now there's two more involved in your life.
There are.
And the way you say my boys quickens my heart.
Yeah.
Because it is your heartbeat. Mm-hmm. It is your life beat. So now you're contemplating these things. We're rushing up to surgery here, and we peer out into May here. Mm-hmm. Surgery comes. You get an incredible phone call when you're getting ready to go into surgery.
Yeah. Tony Dungy is a guy that I just got to know him on a you know really high level when he was a coach, and we lost contact for many years. I had a lady who worked for the Colts for many years named Stephanie who went out. Went out of her way to reconnect me with some guys that had an impact on me as a young guy. And the only request I had was, you know, could you get me in contact with these guys so that I can call them one more time? Like, I just want to tell this group of men, you know, I'm not calling them saying, hey, can you make a donation? Can you do it? No, it was, I just want them to know if I don't make it, I want them to know the impact they had on a guy that was running up and down the sidelines with an orange X on his, you know, like they had no idea because in that world, a season ends and the team's never the same. Sometimes the coaches go, sometimes the players go, and I'm not a guy that's there daily. So a season may go and a player may leave and you never have a chance to tell them, hey, you know, here's what you did for me along the way. Here's how you shaped me as a person, as a leader, as a, you know, a father many years later, right? So I just wanted that opportunity to tell a couple guys, like, man, I just appreciate what you did for me.
One more conversation. Just give me one more.
Yeah, just give me one more. Yeah.
You know what? And these guys are used to the ask constantly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're constantly being asked to contribute or do or be.
Yeah.
And you didn't want anything from them.
No. I mean, coach, I mean, he's... In my mind, he's the closest thing to Jesus that's ever walked this earth since Jesus. He went out of his way. He said, I'm going to call you the night before at this time, be ready. And he prayed over me. And he's the last man I prayed with before I had surgery.
Surgery is on what day then?
The 20th, yeah.
So on the 19th, he calls you up the evening before.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of dinner, step outside, and we pray together. I walk back in, have dinner, and I got tears running down my face, and But, you know, it put me at ease, you know, to know that people like that were, you know, were there for me, yes. You know, people that didn't have to be. We had our conversation, the only one that I wanted, but they showed up and they continue to show up, right? That it means the world to me.
You know, I mentioned that we're talking in terms of millimeters and they open up your skull.
Yeah.
And the graphicness of that becomes pretty earth-shattering. They're taking out a
piece. I think so. I was asleep. I don't know. Yeah. Well,
they're taking out a piece of that and laying it aside and putting it in the freezer for later on. You know, they're doing all kinds of things. And I mentioned that they're doing this all within millimeters of surgery.
Yeah.
And you have one of the most gifted individuals in the world doing this surgery.
Yeah.
What's amazing to me is you wake up from this and it's hours before they're saying, we're going to discharge you. You can get out of here. Mm-hmm. You could go home.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, no, he just opened up his head.
Yeah, it was, I got out the next Thursday. So Friday and then Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot happened in between that time. I mean, it wasn't easy, but it wasn't the worst thing that ever happened either.
Well, let's talk about that because there was a tumor that they couldn't get to.
Yeah, there was some of it they couldn't get to safely. And I knew that. And we knew that going in, that would be the case, that we're going to get everything we can safely. And then we're going to have to eradicate the rest of it other ways. So, yeah.
So next step, what happens? Because this is something that stirred my heart so deeply.
Yeah. I'll just back up real quick. Because before surgery started, I made a point to do two things. One was I wrote letters to certain people in my life so they knew. If I didn't make it out of that surgery, they knew how I felt about them. And then the very last thing I did before they put me under, they even had the mask ready right beside me, is I asked all of the people in the room to join hands and we all prayed together. I prayed over the team. And that was really important to me to like, look, if the last thing I remember in my life and I go to sleep, the last thing I'm going to do is pray.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go into, you know, I'm going to go into heaven and God's going to be there to meet me.
You know what I wanted you to do? I want you to do us a favor here because it'll be helpful.
Yeah.
There's something about five sensing a story, okay? When I write it down, I write it as a nickel, okay? But five sensing a story just means I'm just going to go back. And if this gets too close to home, then we'll just stop, okay? And we'll turn in a different direction. But
it won't.
Okay. But five sensing a story just allows you to look around the room, to feel the temperature of the room. Mm-hmm. To feel the hands of those around you. Tell me, just give me a half dozen to a dozen different five senses that you experienced in that time just before they put that mask on.
It was cold. it was really cold. That's one of those moments, you know, it's not like they're going in to fix a knee. I've had that surgery before. Like that, you know, your chances are pretty good. You're going to wake up.
Yeah.
This one, it's, are you going to wake up? It's, are you going to wake up and be the same person you were before you went to sleep?
That's right.
So those are things I was thinking about. You know, being in a room with a giant MRI machine in the room to where they could at any point take you and put you in that to see where they are and what they're close to is interesting. I also went to, before I went to sleep, they had prepared me for the possibility that they could wake me up during the surgery and ask me questions ask me to answer questions they had asked me the day before in a 3-hour marathon session of cognitive stuff. So there was just a lot going on of like, how is this going to go? You know,
that was so interesting too, is that they might wake you up.
Yeah.
So you've got the coldness in the room.
Yeah.
You've got all of these machines. You've got an MRI machine right there, and it doesn't. You don't turn off an MRI machine, by the way. Mm-hmm. It stays on all the time because it costs thousands and thousands of dollars to flick the switch to start.
Yeah, sure.
So that little machine is making noise over there.
Yeah.
So you're hearing different things. What?
And the people. Like I was feeling the people around me and from all, you know, ethnicities and things. And like, I don't even know if these people have a relationship with God. I don't know if they know, you know God. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter. They all knew that in that moment, I needed my moment, right?
That is awesome.
And it didn't matter to them.
Yes.
And everyone was there.
How many people are in that room?
Oh, gosh. I don't even know the number, but I would say it was probably in the 20 range at
That's
least.
That's what I was
And
just
people were probably
say.
Coming in and, you know, coming yeah. in, coming out, you know. Dr.
There's
Burns,
so
I told my kids much later when they got to meet Dr. Burns that when they took my skull off, that Dr. Burns got hungry and went and ate a bowl of cereal out of it. So, got to add some humor in here somewhere.
You are twisted, dude.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you got to...
Got to do what you got to do in the moment.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, yeah. So those are some things I felt for sure. And
in those kind of atmospheres, it's always amazing to me because it is an orchestration of human beings that know everything that they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And they are working in the conductor is Dr. Burns in that moment, and everybody responds. And that's why he's chosen that team and those people to work with.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of five senses working on in that moment.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, we're not done with the story yet, though, because there's a next step, and this is, help me out. There's a piece of a tumor still inside
Correct.
Your head.
Correct, yeah. They got, I think, upwards of 90% out. But then I had to go home and recover. And I did some, you know, therapy stuff, right? Physical therapy, cognitive therapies, occupational. I did a lot of that stuff. And then I got the news in early July that I had been, you know, approved with insurance to go back to the Mayo Clinic to do a form of radiation treatment called proton radiation, which is only offered in a handful of places around the country. It was really important for me and for my doctors, right, and their efforts to get it approved through insurance. Like, this guy is 40 years old. He's got two kids. He's got a life ahead of him. He, you know, provides for his family through work and all those things. Like, we need to do this form of radiation treatment because it has the least amount of side effects.
That's right.
You know, it's like a modern day aircraft, you know, shooting a missile through a window, as opposed to a B-17 dropping a bomb and you hope it maybe hits within a mile where you wanted it to.
What a great analogy.
That's the way I've always... Yeah, it's just, you know, it's going to go in here, it's going to come out, as opposed to it's going to go in here and it's going to go out the other side.
Yeah.
So it saved me cognitively in a big way. And while I was doing that, I was doing chemotherapy as well.
But they thought you had a stroke.
Yes.
Or you did have a stroke.
I did during surgery. Mm-hmm. I did.
You had a stroke during surgery?
Towards the end. They were actually, as I understand it, I was in the process of being closed up, and they were going to do an MRI deal, and it happened out of nowhere. Yeah, it was a small one, but it was a significant one in terms of my recovery, I believe. Yeah,
it was significant on so many different levels.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
What did that stroke do? What happened there?
Well— I describe it as, and I believe this with all my heart, that, you know, God gave these doctors immense capabilities to heal people and to do things that someone like myself could never do, but they can only go so far. And in order for me to survive and complete the mission he had laid out for me long before I was born— he had to take the last step to make it possible. And so I believe with all my heart that, you know, they took me there. They took me to the edge of where they could take me. And the last step was God going, you know what? They've done what I've asked them to do. I'm going to take the final step. And that blood vessel ran to the remaining piece of the tumor. You know, so I believe he just flipped a switch on it.
I think I need to make sure that the audience is listening to this because the blood vessel where the stroke took place.
Correct.
And a stroke clogs that blood vessel.
Yeah.
It keeps the blood from going through.
Correct.
Was what was feeding the remainder of that tumor.
That's what I feel. And I've had conversations with Dr. Burns since, and he can't definitively say.
That's
it,
right.
It doesn't matter. But he says it this way. I ask him often, and did it help or did it hurt? He goes, I can't tell you definitively, but I don't think it hurt. And thank God I didn't have any consequences from it other than I think that was God's intervention.
I do too.
For sure.
You know, every once in a while he shows off.
Yeah.
And that was his show off.
Yeah,
moment,
absolutely.
Let me show you this.
Yeah. Watch me do this. Yeah. Hold my wine.
Yeah. Forrest, Andrew, because you weren't done. Forrest Gump knows no end here, okay?
Yes.
Because you got to take a trip out to a place that very, 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 very few people have ever gone. And that was with the Mayo family. Help me out there.
So in my time there in the summer, so I went back. I was there for 6 weeks. And during that time, my kids had to go home for school. They came back for the end, right? And when they came back for the end, we got to do something special. And it was because of that 6 weeks in Rochester, as I refer to it as. I made a lot of friends. I just had to be around people, right?
That's you.
Especially, yeah, but in that moment for sure, right? I mean, you're living Groundhog's Day every single day. You wake up, you go to radiation, you come home. I was working at the time. So I went back to work because just to keep myself busy. So I'd work. Then I would take my anti-nausea pill. I'd try to eat some food, actually before the anti-nausea, but try to eat some food. I can't taste anything. You know, I don't even know why I'm doing it other than I know I have to. I'd ride my bike, my Peloton up there. I would do all these things and then take the chemo, go to sleep, and then just do it all over again. So I met a lot of great people. And some of those folks were up at Mayo Wood, as they refer to it, Dr. Charlie's home, up until, I think, the mid-70s. But those ladies took really good care of me. They just, everybody who came in town to visit me, I'd take them up there. Like, you've got to see the history of this place. And,
yes. You
know, those ladies became my Rochester girlfriends, as I refer to them. and they're just great, great ladies, right? They're all retired folks from the Historical Society, and that's what they do. And they're just lovely, lovely people. And so I asked, look, my kids are going to be here. There's a giant bell that sits out back that's giant. And in the old days, the Mayo family would ring that, and that was like, okay, the kids, it's time to come home and have dinner. And I asked the question, just the worst they're going to say is no. And I asked if after my last radiation treatment, I was going to ring the bell like everybody else does in the clinic, but can I come up to Mayo Wood and ring that with my boys? And they made it happen.
You mess it up every time for me on this one, man, because I can't help but think how beautiful that question was.
Yeah.
I just want to ring this with my boys.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a bell that literally would, when it peals, it goes over 100 acres.
Yeah,
You can hear it all over the whole place.
Yeah, and we rang that bell as hard as we could. It was a beautiful day, for sure. Yeah.
Andrew, this story just amazes me because it just, I always talk about the signature of God on a painting of our lives. And he is always working. He's never late. He's always working in our lives and he's working in those around us. And the fact is, there have been some pretty cool things that have happened since then in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Because God brought you into a relationship that's been pretty special as well. You want to share with me? Can you share with it? I sure will. Can you share that one without crying, okay?
I'll try. So I left Rochester with a different outlook on where my life was going to go. If God was going to give me this second chance, I can't live it the way I lived it before, you know? I can't live it in, for lack of a better word, put up with the things that I put up with in the past or live it the way I did and not give back and help other people. So I just went home with this renewed sense of where it was I was supposed to go with my life. Quite a bit of time, I had more chemotherapy sessions to do and things like that. And I went on a journey, and Pastor Darren talks about it a lot at our church, at Heartland and Fishers, and you know, give God a year of your life. That's all I'm asking. Just a year. You know, if you give him a year and see what happens. And I went all in. And through that, some amazing things started to happen in my life. But it took some time, right?
Right.
And it took until this year for me to, you know, in my mind, I had given God my entire life, all of it. You got it all. But I'm going to hold on to this one little piece over here. And that was a bit of, I needed to give forgiveness, you know, in a portion of my life. Yeah. And I went in March on a work trip down down to the Caribbean, and I sat on a beach for days, and I had worship music playing. You know, a lot of the people I were with, they were in the pool, they were drinking cocktails, they were doing all these things. I was just sitting out there just looking at the ocean going, look how far I've come in this year. And it's not because of me. I'm not that special. It was because of God. And that was shortly before Easter of 2023. And I just said, when I get home, I've got to give that forgiveness to that person. You know? And when I did that, literally 2 weeks later, this beautiful, beautiful woman was brought to my life. Yeah. It was him. All of it was him.
But, you know, you can't, that a lot of people need to understand this. You cannot move forward.
Yeah.
While this forgiveness, unforgiveness is gripping your life.
Yeah, that was the last piece of it. And he was like, when you finally give me that, I'll give you what you desire, you know, what you're longing for, what you've actually prayed for years, right? Years prior. Like, I just want this. This is what I want. Like, this is, I think, I don't know, not deserve. I don't deserve anything in my life. But, like, that's what I was longing for in my life.
That's what you were longing
and,
for.
And, right. Yeah, this beautiful woman came along. We had coffee. We went to dinner. But the most important thing to me was I was going to church one morning. What I knew was she was in Louisville, Kentucky. And I called her and said, I'm going to church early today. I'm going to go get out on my bike, right? And her response was, all right, I'll just go ahead and go home then. I was planning on meeting you at church at 10. I'm like, I'm turning the car around. And, you know, that was so important, you know, that she wanted to have that faith journey with me. And it has made all the difference in the world and where we're going. And the cherry on the pie is I have two great kids. She has two great kids. And I now get to have the opportunity to, you know, bring along four incredible kids and help them grow into men.
Yes.
And men who lead on God.
Yes, that's right.
And that means the world to me.
You know, it's so funny because Lindsay is 100% girl, okay? And God has said, here, be a boy mom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she is. But I remember the first Sunday I was sitting behind you guys. I didn't know you.
Yeah.
I see Lindsay up there, and my heart just starts to melt because I love her very deeply and have always wanted the very, very, very best for her. Mm-hmm. And that's what God brought through this.
Yeah.
The very, very best. So.
Yeah.
Andrew, thank you so much for opening up your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your life story. Yeah. And thank you also because this is going to touch the lives of other people.
Yeah.
So I want to give them a way to get a hold of you, but not directly. Okay, so what we're going to do is I'm just going to leave them an email that they can get a hold of me. Is it story.mosaics1@gmail.com.
Yeah,
and if they circuitously need to get in touch with you or want to get in touch with you, I want to give them that venue or that avenue.
Absolutely.
But I would also encourage a lot of you, you need to share this with other people. This is one of those stories that if it's not shared, it fails to reach its fullest potential because there are others who need to hear this, that in our moments where we cannot see the next moment, God is still there.
Yeah.
Hey.
He shows up in the good, in the bad, and even when you're drifting, he's still there.
Amen.
And he brings you right back as long as you want it.
I don't always close the podcast in prayer, but this one I'm going to.
Yeah, okay? Let's do it.
God, thank you so much for this story because it is one of those stories that changes people's lives. And you sowed it in this man's life for a purpose and for a reason, not only to draw him back, but to draw many, many, many others into this relationship with you so that their lives are not cast adrift upon oceans of uncertainty any longer, but they find their hope in you. I pray this in your very precious name. Amen.
Amen.
Hey, thanks for joining us. And those of you, make sure you go out to storymosaics.com and let us know you listen to this.